Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Rod, we were in the building yesterday, Levi's Stadium. We got to see the 49ers probably play their best game of the season. I think I need to have a conversation with Jed because I was trying to go back and think of all of the games that I've been to at Levi's. I want to say I'm like 7-1. Like, Jed needs to get me back in the building if he wants some victories here. So that was fun yesterday. We were both there with my buddy Brian Ruano. We got to see Robert Ramos. But overall, fun game, great experience, and we got to see some really good, strong 49ers football.
Yeah, it was a tremendous experience. It was nice meeting Brian and finally being able to shake and give Robert a hug. It was nice after so many years of knowing him through the various online incarnations. But like I said, as we got together just right now, it's really weird how the things that you don't notice, because I tried not to be in my phone too much. I had some business stuff going on that I had to deal with. But so I didn't know that at one point Brian asked how many sacks, and I looked that up later on in the game. I didn't realize there was at one point that they only had like 2 yards. That's pretty wild. I saw the graphic that was floating around that the 49ers had like 310 total yards and they had two. And then I think Troy mentioned it this tonight that at one point they had more punts than they did first downs or something like that. Crazy. It was a real dominant performance, and it was really kind of cathartic for me, because while you can make all the caveats in the world and, you know, the Bears being who and what they are and all of that, it was just good to see them thump somebody. And then not, you know, because for me, it was like, okay, now we've got up and we've done this thing, because we've played dominant or, you know, very good first halves of football, and then we've let teams just kind of hang around, and then, you know, we've won some and then we lost a lot of them. So my big thing is like coming out of the end of the second half was like, okay, let's go ahead and just keep our foot on these dudes' throats. And they did exactly that. They made that one nice play where, Caleb made a great throw, and then Rome, you know, played ballerina and came down with the ball. But other than that, I mean, it was a complete utter curb stomp.
So what does it mean for the big picture here? Well, the 49ers still have slim chances to win this division with the Seahawks beating Arizona. The Niners are 6-7, tied with the Cardinals. Rams are 7-6, and they come into Levi's on Thursday. So we have a quick turnaround because we'll be back Thursday night talking Niners-Rams. And the Seahawks are 8-5. Now, they may be one of the, I don't even want to say worst, because you can't say worst when you actually have an 8-5 record. But I was looking at the net points, and the Texans at 8-5 and the Seahawks at 8-5, they are the worst when it comes to playoff teams and their net points. So their points for subtracted by the points against. Seahawks are only plus 19, which is kind of interesting, because the other thing that's interesting about Seahawks are they are 3-4 at home. You remember back in the day how great of a home team they were. And then they're 5-1 on the road. So it's a little bit of like a weird season for them. But hey, if they can win the division in a funky season, good on them. But even like you look in the NFC South and like Tampa, like you're like, oh, Tampa's solid. They're a plus 54, which is way more than plus 19. And then, you know, just going down the line, Commanders plus 80 at 8-5, just in the NFC. So, you know, the Niners are very close to being eliminated, I'm assuming, if the Seahawks just win a couple more games. But at the same time, like you said, it was really the first time they put both halves together. In the second half, like, there was some stuff where you're like, okay, they're just sitting in zone and they're just trying to let Caleb complete all of these short passes, keep the clock running. But then they would get the ball back and they could score. So, you know, they did keep the pressure on Chicago's defense. I would love to see them run the entire slate. Like, that would be awesome to see if they could do that. You beat the Rams, then you beat, you know, the Cardinals are, I guess, the last week of the season. The Lions are in there.
Dolphins.
I would just love to see them win all the rest of the games and just go like, hey, like, we gave a great effort and it, you know, whatever the luck or whatever just didn't happen. What I don't want to see, and we'll get into this as we kind of talk about the pluses and minuses of the game. I don't want to see, and this is not anything we can control, but the injuries. We just keep seeing these injuries pile up. Having the short turnaround Thursday, Bosa was out. Like, he wasn't even doubtful. This dude was out. Hufanga was back. Dre Greenlaw possibly will be back. So if they get a few of these people back on defense, you kind of start to go, I wonder if they can really play competitive football. And then, unfortunately, on the offensive side with CMC being gone, then Garendo's gets hurt, and now you're at your fourth string running back, Patrick Taylor Jr. But hell, if Kittle keeps playing like he's 25 years old, you know, then you got something on that side. So I'm not saying this is the most I'm looking forward to 49ers football, but at the same time, there's four games left. You know, run the table, man. Like,
you finish the season on a 5-game winning streak. There's nothing, you know, regardless of what the peanut gallery says about draft picks and whatnot, there's nothing bad about finishing the season on a 5-game win streak. I just think, you know, it's probably not exactly, as a matter of fact, it's not anywhere analogous, but, you know, that 6-0 start or finish when we traded for Jimmy was the portents.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good football that was to follow after a lot of pretty bad to mediocre to outright bad football that had preceded it. So again, ordinarily, I'm not a superstitious person or juju type person, but I am when it comes to stuff like, you know, tanking and, you know, sitting dudes out. I just think that it sets your franchise back if you put yourself in a mode where we feel like under these certain set of circumstances, we aren't going to try as hard as we can to win football games. Win the games. You know, you'll be able, it would be awesome for us to beat the damn Lions. That would be great. That would be a highlight of the season if we were to hang their second loss, or I don't know if it's second or third loss. Third loss on them, and put their number one seed.
Actually, second. They're 12-1.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. To put their number one seed in jeopardy, at least, because I think they've got one more with Minnesota, and that would tie them, because I know Minnesota only has two losses, but which is crazy. But I just think that, and I don't think of it as being spoilers. I just think of it as us, you know, righting the ship and playing the type of football that, you know, we know that we can play. It was the dogs, you have to call the dogs off of Sorensen for at least a week. I mean, yeah. I don't know where you criticized the defense yesterday. It was excellent. And again, just putting all those places, putting those things together, the offensive line played very well, mostly. We still had leaky. I was able to watch several leaky plays by my man McKivitz and then Jalen Moore. But again, as backups, that's fine. Ben Barch, is Ben Barch for real? Are you going to pay him? Are you going to pay Banks? Brendel, kind of think he's cooked. There's a lot still to be that we can glean from these last four games moving into the off season, which I think, you know, is going to be rife with intrigue. I don't think there's going to be much intrigue, but I think we'll play up the intrigue. Are they going to sign Brock or aren't they? Are they going to just, you know, make him play it out and franchise him? I can't see under, you know, my thing has been all day is that what has Brock done for him to be the guy where you guys to take the hard line on, you know, just from a relationship standpoint, that would, to me, would send a horrible message. Because that kid has done everything you've asked him to do. He bailed you out of a huge spot with the whole Trey Lance thing. You know, it's time to, you know, reward him. It's not, you know, I get it, I guess.
But it's not him. It's the market, right? Like, I remember Jalen Rose would say he's talking specifically about NBA player deals. He was like, you're not trading players. You're trading contracts. Mm-hmm. And what this is, mm-hmm. is you have a quarterback. That quarterback is in a market in the NFL where there are very few positions that dominate that market. And so thus, it is the position and the market that you're paying for it, whether or not you think Brock is, you know, is Josh Allen or any of these guys. And he's more than likely not a top five guy. Could he be a top 10 guy? If he's a top 10 guy, that money that he's going to make in 2 or 3 years will probably be the 6th or 7th highest paid quarterback. That's just how the market is going to go.
And it's also a business, and he is damn sure face of the franchise worthy. So, I mean, even if he's not those guys as players, if it was my business, I would love Brock Purdy to be the face of my franchise for the next 10 years because I feel he's shown if we can put the pieces around him, even if he is not an elevator, you don't just discard those kind of guys in the hopes of finding who. So if not Brock, who? You know, it's okay. It's easy to say, well, he's not Lamar, he's not Josh Allen, he's not Joe Burrow, he's not Patrick Mahomes. Okay, that's fine. You might be right. But where are those guys? I don't think you're going to get any one of those guys, and I don't see anybody who's a sure shot of being that. And you're not going to be in a position, hopefully, in the next, you know, 5 to 6 years to be at the top of the draft to get one of those guys. So, you know, love the one you're with is what I say. And I think do a lot worse than Brock Purdy.
The thing is you look at some of these drafts, right? The Trey Lance draft, Lawrence comes out and he's supposed to be a can't miss dude, right? He's kind of missed right now. Like, I hope he gets better. Like, that concussion was nasty, and this is no shade at him, but some of this is probably Jaguars, but he has not been the guy who they thought he was going to be so far.
But that's part of it, you know. That's one of the things is when you get history tells us that when you're drafted to the top of the draft like that, it's not just your talent. You're obviously going to a dysfunctional situation. And the situation, more so than in any sport in the NFL, matters. It matters who the owner is. It matters who the general manager is. It matters who the head coach is. And if you are in a dysfunctional situation, it's really hard for a player to overcome all of that, no matter how generational his talent may be. So like I say, I don't root against the kid, but that's a perfect case in point you just brought up. At that draft, who has done anything out of that draft.
Lawrence, Trey, Justin Fields, who's on his second team and cannot beat out Russell
and
Wilson.
You noticeably forgot Zach Wilson.
Forgot about Zach Wilson, the number two pick.
Rightfully so.
And then go down the line.
And then Mac
Jones also on his second team. And I think he's Lawrence's backup, isn't he?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. That was supposed to be a quarterback heavy draft, five quarterbacks taken in the top 15 or whatever. And then this year, now we'll have to see how this plays out. But you do have top QBs. We saw one, Caleb. Caleb didn't have a terrific game, but he looks like he's got all the tools to be something. But going back to what you said, does he have the organization that will build around him? That is to be seen. So far this year, that was not the right answer. Washington, they have their quarterback of the future. He looks fantastic. He's got to stay healthy, too, because he puts himself into some danger. Drake May, Bill Simmons is in love with Drake May. He thinks Drake May is going to be the next coming. Good for him.
You can see the talent. You can definitely see his talent.
And they got to put the pieces around him, too. So it's just
Bo Nix.
How about Bo Nix?
The 30-year-old Bo Nix. Exactly. He's not 30, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, so you just never know. And Bo Nix, I guess Jaden Daniels has played probably the best out of all of them. But
especially on my fantasy team, that's for sure.
Yeah, he is awesome. I wasn't expecting anything out of Bo Nix or the Broncos. And, you know, so you just never know. I say that to say you never know.
And, you know, Penix hasn't even got to play. And then the kid from Michigan who McCarthy hasn't played at all. So there are those guys to be seen as well. But basically, you have a guy in Brock. You don't have to play guesswork. As long as Brock stays healthy, you know what you're going to get. High completion percentage. He's going to make good decisions. He's going to have a couple games like the Buffalo game where ball just slips out of his hand in weird instances. But
I like his moxie, though. Golly, I don't know if that's even a thing. But he's a tough kid. He looks like an all shucks dude. But that's bull. He's got some swagger to him. He thinks he's the best quarterback in the league, and that's all that matters.
When you and I were younger, we would have called him like Opie Cunningham or something, that because of the way he looks. But I mean, he's proven. He went to NFC Championship game and then Super Bowl in back-to-back years, and in the middle of it tore up his elbow. Like, that's how tough he is at the same time. And that's what Shanahan needs in his system. He needs a quarterback who's gonna work through some stuff and fight through some stuff. And Brock has shown that he is a really tough dude in that smaller package of human being.
From that book you put me on, I think the next step of his development is to be able to start pushing back on Shanahan. It's like, hey man, I want to run this instead of this, kind of like Matt Ryan. I think that will be another elevation to his game. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. That's a great point, because Brock signs this contract. He's the most important person in the franchise. And right now, the most important person in the franchise is Shanahan, because he's the guy. But Brock signs that contract and the 49ers invest all that money. Brock becomes that person. So that's an interesting dynamic as well, is just from the power standpoint of that. But I think Brock is also a good student, and I think he's also probably very smart and savvy. He may not do the Matt Ryan thing in the same way that Matt Ryan did the Matt Ryan thing. He may do it in a way that is maybe more collaborative, so that, you know, it works in tandem. I think that will probably be the way to do it, but it's a great point. So while we should just talk about quickly, because there was not a lot to dislike in that game yesterday, but let's talk about some of the things that we liked. And I'll start Brock to George, man. We were kind of thinking about, you know, is George going to be here for a long term? Well, the thing that Brock and George have right now, Brock and Debo do not have. So that relationship or that receiver QB combo doesn't look great. But the George Kittle, this dude looks like he's like fountain of youth. George Kittle, he was awesome yesterday.
Yeah, he really was. Yeah, I have to admit that I was somebody who thought that the best days may have been behind him and that he might be looking to cash out, you know, and go get a big deal somewhere like in Tennessee where he lives now and can, you know, just kind of on a big deal, you know, live at home and, you know, just kind of do that thing, you know, in the back nine of his career. But I don't think the back nine is here. It is here yet. And that is a real tricky thing with players in age these at these times, because, you know, there was a time we are both, you know, have been watching long enough to know that 30, especially at some positions, is a clear demarcation of fall off. And while, you know, players take care of their bodies and all of that in ways and spend more money than they ever have in football, to me, it seems like more so than I don't watch a whole lot of baseball. And then basketball is kind of different. The fall off, when it happens pretty quick in the NFL. But yeah, you rarely see a guy like a resurgence, though. And that's what I feel like this season has been for George. Mm-hmm. Was kind of a resurgence. I thought his days as a number one option, obviously, I thought he could still be a productive player, but as a downfield threat and a number one option in an offense, I had kind of thought those days were done. But, you know, clearly I was wrong. He is having a monster season. And had a monster day yesterday.
Yeah.
103 yards. Yak. That's crazy.
And Shanahan was finding ways to get him in space. He figured out how to get Debo a couple of times. But for Kittle, there were some big plays that they opened up for him. And when you can do that, it's got to help JJ and Debo, especially when it comes to their inability to separate. Just getting Kittle involved, you know, I kept saying this all year long. It's like, what are the solutions to the red zone? Well, to me, the solution is you have these like utility guys like George, who, you know, you can fake block and then get him in space and see if he can actually create something. And they didn't really do a lot of that, but that's the thing that I was talking about, which is what they did yesterday just to get him open. I thought it was masterful.
The novices, my novices' view of offensive football says to me that yesterday there was just a whole lot more space out there. And I thought it had a lot to do with Garrido and his explosiveness. He widens the field. And that was what I thought more so than anything with Debo this season, was that the area was so constricted and congested that it was hard for him, you know, because he's not a runaway from people, or he's not going to route you up. He needs space. Yeah. He needs to be able to, you know, run across the field and not have players, you know, on his hip and running into coverage. And, you know, yesterday there was a lot of green grass out there, like you say, for Kyle to play with in the offense. And being in the stands, you could see. That was what I love so much about it, is you could see things open up. And it's like, oh, is Brock going to hit it? And he was on the money yesterday. He was throwing darts. And he was like, yes, every time. He was like, I would see it. And just as I would see it, he would let it go right where I saw it was looking, and it would be right on the money. It was beautiful. Football is beautiful to watch when it's executed like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyle's entire game plan was working.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Another thing that I liked, and I'll let you grab on to the couple things that you really liked. For whatever reason, now I would have to, I was trying to figure out why this was, but where did the pass rush come from?
I know their offensive line isn't very good, but nevertheless, I mean, it was a sight to see. I don't know. Like I said, when Brian had asked, we were up to 6 sacks,
yes,
and then 8 quarterback hits. I never really reviewed it to see where we ended up, but it was just crazy.
Gross Matos had three.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Floyd had 2. And now he leads the team. He has more sacks than Bosa. And then Malik Collins had 1. And then when you're talking about the quarterback hits, Malik Collins had an extra 1 in addition to the sack. So, yeah, it just came. It's just like, I don't know if there were moments where I was like, okay, how come Caleb isn't feeling this pressure? So I don't know if it was coming so quickly that he couldn't even feel it. But some of those sacks, he was right in the pocket, and they just crushed the pocket. And it was like they crushed his offensive lineman into him, and they were just able to sack him that way.
And several of them, I didn't keep count. It was that serious. I was just trying to, you know, experience. But I know that there were several of them that were coverage sacks where he just didn't have anywhere to go with the ball, which was, you know, great to see, because that's not normally how our defense operates. You know, they're just our secondary is kind of just trying to give the front time to get there. But there were several times, and they showed the replays where, you know, when you looked out there, he just didn't have anywhere to go with the ball. And then I know there was that last one where you had noticed, and it was true when I watched the game, he had an alley to run.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was not anywhere for him to throw the ball.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, which was beautiful to see. You know, it's pretty young back there. And it's nice to see, again, talking about developing towards the future and how many of these guys are we going to keep and invest in and continue to develop, and how many of them are we going to let go? And just because I'm tired, even if it means us taking a step back, it's not my team, but I'm kind of invested in it. I really wish we would take a step back and just draft a bunch of dudes, sign a bunch of undrafted free agents, and then just use that 4 years to develop them. And because I'm just tired of the 1 year scratch and dent pile free agency, and just get some young guys and bring them in here, and, you know, get what you can out of them, and just draft and develop. And I know it gets hard to do that when you feel like you've got a shot at winning the Super Bowl, but I think this season will allow us to take a step back from that and just get on a track where we are more of a regular football team that has, you know, that builds up to being a good team and then is good for a little bit. And then you take a step back, and then, you know, because those guys that you draft and develop, you're not going to be able to sign all of them. So you're going to have some attrition, but hopefully you're signing and you're drafting and developing. That's just what it is. You are replacing players through the draft. You're not hoping to swing at the fence every year, you know, on this year's big free agent. But in this market, and with the salary cap doing what it is, we should have the money when it comes time to do it, to go get, you know, resources should not be an issue with going and getting, you know, free agents to plug the gaps. But, you know, I think that we've gotten spoiled. I know I've gotten spoiled. I just don't think that, like, 5 and 6 all pros on a team is, in today's modern NFL, is a realistic, it's just not, it's not a sustainable model. So we need to get back to something that's more realistic. It sucks that we weren't able to convert that talent into a Super Bowl, but you know, that's
damn close two times though. That's gotta be the thing where you're just like, oh, we're right there. And you know, a lot of Cal Kami's been really hitting on this one, which is think about how long it took Andy Reid to get there. And we haven't even talked about the Shanahan thing, but I think it's so ridiculous. We've talked about this in previous shows, but not today. The idea that Shanahan, you know, fans are upset. What? So stupid. It's really, really stupid because they have been through, outside of Harbaugh, so many poor head coaches since Steve Mariucci. And I'm not even sure if Mariucci was that great of a coach. He was very young in his career, and he was kind of like the chosen one by the Yorks, and they kind of nudged Seifert out of there a little earlier than maybe necessary.
Yeah, so it was really a, you know, just he was at Cal locally, and it was just like you say, I think it might have been a little bit too soon for him. But
yeah,
it was, you know, I kind of have a tendency to troll online, and that's what I posted today. I wonder if Jay could fleece Jeffrey Lurie out of a first round pick for Kyle, and then we would never hear from him again. Which is the opposite. Can you imagine giving Kyle that offense? Not that I want Kyle to go anywhere, because like you said, I think he's an excellent coach, and I think letting him out of here at 44 years old, it would be a colossal blunder. Because hell, if he just works to regular retirement age, you're talking about what, another 21 years?
Well, could he be their Tomlin? Like, that's the thing, right? You look at Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh isn't always good, but they're always competing for wild card spots. And this year, they've been able to put it together even by not having a fantastic quarterback. Russ is playing well, though.
18 years, not one losing season. That's amazing. Crazy. Yeah. I mean,
that should be the model of what you want, because what you have is now. I don't know if John Lynch would stick around that long. We would have to see. But Kyle is—he's a lifer. He's a son of a coach. That's all he's going to do with his career. I don't think Kyle wants to go into the front office. He doesn't want to do the McVay thing and do the broadcasting. Like he is a coach. So I would rather have Kyle here then have him anywhere else, and then us, similar to this quarterback situation we were just talking about, you have the guy, let him get through, and think about how sweet it will be if he does eventually get a championship on the Niners. Like, he's, you know, he goes through all of this up and down, and he finally gets one. Like, you know, his pops had to go through the Raiders situation before then going to the Niners and then going to Denver to create his spot. It doesn't always happen at the same time for everyone. So the idea that we need to get Kyle out of here, it's like, if you can tell me who is out there who would be better for this team, then maybe I'll think about it. But, you know, maybe if Belichick was 20 years younger, then maybe you make that move. But not now. I just don't see anybody who is like ready to step in and improve on what Shanahan has done.
I mean, even somebody, if you want to talk about in terms of accomplishments, not at the NFL level. I mean, I guess if Saban was infatuated, I mean, I guess you kick the tires, but that hasn't gone well in the NFL, you know? So I don't know. He would be the only one, like you say. And if I just think, you know, turning the keys to the franchise over to somebody like Belichick, when you know the window is going to be short, it just doesn't make any sense. When you've got the future sitting right here, you just don't do it. And then it seems like, and I don't know, I'm definitely speculating now. I don't know if it's his father's influence and experience, but that was one of the big things about him and Lynch coming in as a pair. Apparently he doesn't have any interest in doing both. He doesn't really have any interest in being the personnel guy as well. Because I've always said Mike Shanahan, the GM, is the one who got Mike Shanahan, the coach, fired. It's just, those are just two hard jobs. They're two separate jobs, and it's hard to do both. We can talk. We've talked before, and we'll probably talk again about whether or not offensive coordinator and head coach are two different jobs, and it's hard to do both. But I know he ain't giving that up. But it's hard to be the personnel guy full time and be the head coach. I think it's important to have some distance between the two. And if you can build a relationship, find somebody that you're in simpatico with on the type of football players that you want, and then have them go out there and get them. And then you just, it seems like Kyle is just, you know, content with playing on his whiteboard and, you know, whatever toys you give him, and trying to figure out how to deploy those toys, which is a great thing. Now, like you say, I don't know. I can only base what my information on the media, but it really kind of gets to feel that Lynch is decidedly not a lifer. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how long he eventually ends up doing this, which would be a huge loss, because he seems to be really, really good at his job.
But at the same time, the Niners would have the pick of the litter of who would be out there, because there will be so many personnel folks who would want to come to this program because of having a head coach, and because of now having your quarterback set, and because of their willingness to take big shots and bring and make trades and bring in CMC. And
honestly, though, I don't know if I'd be too jazzed about working with Parod, but
well, you know, Parod and Jed, right? Parod and Jed have had their issues with getting along with folks, for sure. And you would hope that in Jed's experience that has kind of changed, but
it's just maturity. You'd hope that it's mature. That's maturing.
By the way, Robert Ramos, who we were talking about earlier, who we hung out with yesterday, said he heard a stat that the Catholic Church has gone through more pops in the past 50 years than the Steelers have had head coaches.
Wow. That's crazy. That's wild. That's wild.
So, I got through my positives. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add as far as what you liked?
You while started you were there? With George. I really liked the dominance of the defense. Like you said, it ended up being 7 sacks. I'm looking now. My notes showed that they didn't get a single first down in the first half. Again, it's hard to if you're not like keeping a box score, it's hard to know that when you're sitting in the stands. But I know that they didn't do much. That mm-hmm. was for sure. Then, you know, for all that we've harped on it all year, I would be remiss to not mention 4-for-4 in the red zone. I mean,
yeah,
that was huge. And then the last one I've got is Garrindo. 78 rushing, 50 receiving.
Great. And, I mean, catch. He just kind of turned his shoulder. And I guess the difficulty was that ball was in the sun, which I didn't even think about it when he made the catch, but mm-hmm. he was looking directly at the sun, over the shoulder kind of catch, you know, very similar to to a CMC style catch that I thought was really good. Mm-hmm. So
he's got Mostert vibes. Mm-hmm. You know, he is just big and fast, and, you know, actually, you know, just younger than Mostert was when he broke out here. So he
might have Mostert luck, unfortunately, as well.
Oh, that I hadn't thought about that. So I don't want to put that on the young man. But but just very, very impressive that, you know, when that's your third string running back, I mean, that's impressive. And Patrick Taylor doesn't seem to be awful. I mean, he's serviceable back. I mean, they've been very fortunate with, you know, because Patrick Taylor seems to me as a guy, he's probably not going to create a whole bunch, but if the guys up front block it, he'll go get what's there. which is pretty much all you can ask for out of your four street running back.
And I kind of wonder if they'll be a little creative with him in the pass game as well.
Yeah.
More so than they're comfortable doing that with Corindo. And then I guess I saw Matt Barrows during the game was tweeting that a lot of times Corindo would have to come out of the game because they just do not trust him in passing situations when he's got a block. So they trust Taylor more in those situations. So, you know, we'll see.
He seems good at that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And unlike, you know, a lot of the pundits on social media, I'm not ready to write off CMC yet. You know, I'm hoping that, and again, I'm not Pollyannish in that, you know, when you start talking about the injuries he has, especially to the Achilles, and then, you know, he's 30. And so it's a concern. But like I've said before, I think he's a guy who will continue to provide value as a receiver, even later into his career, if he chooses to do that and doesn't choose to give it up. So I'm not writing him off. And I think he can still be a very, very important cog in the 49er offense for years to come if he's able to recover his health. And so I just think that, again, going back to what we were talking about, if we finish strong, I think, you know, health was a real big part of what this season became. And I don't think that it's going to be like that forever. So,
it's a byproduct of, you know, going into week 20 for 3 years in a row. Yeah.
A lot of football.
And you would hope that with the less tread this year does allow some guys, because remember when Bosa hurt his knee and he was out for that whole year, he trained and trained and trained and came back and won a defense player of the year. So, you know,
and there's got to be a certain mental fatigue that comes along with that. Cause I know I heard both Steph and Draymond talk about that. Mm-hmm. The year they won the championship, that, you know, we had a couple of scuffling years there due to injury and whatnot. And it was just, they were able to mentally reset, not playing all those playoff games and watching those playoff games. When you're a champion, I'm sure, you know, builds a fire in you. You know, it feels weird. You're supposed to be out there playing in the playoffs, you know. So, yeah. Not saying I'm writing off the season. I think we still got like a 4% chance of making the playoffs. But, you know, so it's realistically we're cooked. But
the one thing that we wanted to record last night, but we were unable to record. And one thing that it did allow me to do is almost watch the Warriors game in real time. And I'm sure you saw it. It's been all over the socials, but Draymond doing Steph's night celebration, but doing like the evilest version possible, because he just wanted to get one on Rudy. Like, he hates Rudy with a passion. And so for him to, you know, take Rudy one on one, get a little back screen from Steph, just dunk. He was on. So I got to see the Warriors come back and win in a game that I did not think that they were actually going to win. So that was nice. They got the cup. They got the cup this Wednesday. They're semifinals of the cup, the Emirates Cup. All right. Anything from the negative standpoint? I couldn't really think of anything there. You know, there was some, we had some discussions about Moody yesterday, and this is not anything I heard, but there was a moment where they were going to let Moody kick a field goal. And then all of a sudden they themselves called a timeout. So Shanahan makes a decision to put Moody out there to kick a field goal. And then he calls the timeout to then go, nope, we're going fourth down. Like, not that I know anything about the psychology of kickers, but knowing how Moody has had such an up and down season after missing the extra point in the Super Bowl last year, and he gets hurt and then he misses some kicks and the fans are really, really hard on him. Shanahan on the sideline is constantly just so frustrated with kicker stuff. I was like, man, that poor kid, you know, dude is so young, kicking is already kind of like Shanahan called it a contractor's game.
Contractor. Mm-hmm.
Oh, just the psychology. Like, I don't know. I hope Moody sees a therapist at the end of a season if he doesn't already see one. Like, I just felt bad for the kid.
But see, that's one of the things I don't understand about Shanahan and Lynch is, like, not to beat a dead horse, but Trey, it's like they didn't know he had only played like 50 games between high school and college. So it was like they thought he was going to be Brock, who had played like 50 college games.
Yeah,
I mean, it just wasn't going to be. So it's the same thing with like Jake. If you're going to draft him in the third round, you can't be ready to quit on him now. I mean, or play these mental games with him. You got to be, because that's one of you. Like Harbaugh or not, and I love Harbaugh, nobody speaks confidence in his players the way Jim Harbaugh does. I saw it with my own two eyes. That he resurrected Alex Smith from the grave.
And we didn't think that was really possible.
And really the only thing he did was put his arm around him and say, "You're my guy," regardless. Well, until he wasn't. But still, he got a lot of good football out of Alex Smith when I didn't think he got Alex to play in ways I did not think were possible. He could not get him to be less risk averse, and that was ultimately what did him in. But this game, I can't, just like any sport or anything in life at this point, I believe, it's so much mental. It's what you believe and how much you believe in yourself and the team around you. It makes a huge difference, and know and feel like they believe in you to get it done. And when it's the opposite of that, it could be a rough go. It could be a rough go. So like you say, I hope that guy, I'm tired of piling on him, but I did spend early last week, you know, kind of shitting on him, because, you know, but our fan base, we the internet fan base, and I'm going to start delineating between the two, the internet fan base and the real fan base, two different things. But, you know, the whole comparison to him and Justin Tucker, get out of here. You want to talk about Justin Tucker has built up so much equity with the Baltimore Ravens at this point that even if he is cooked, you're going to ride with him to the end. Moody is the opposite of that. He didn't have any equity build up here. It's an apples and avocados comparison. But we need, you know, I guess at this point we really don't need him much. I mean, I guess we should have kept Matt Wright at this point. he looks pretty good in Kansas City right now. And you know, he's banging them off the uprights though. But that's going to be an interesting offseason. Do they just go all in on Moody, or do they actually bring in somebody?
And, you know, this poor special teams coach who was brought in to fix the special teams, and they've just gotten worse as the season is.
He was supposed to be really good when he came here from Green Bay.
You kind of wonder about the Shanahan ecosystem when it comes to this stuff. But again, you always have to bring up the injuries, because, like you've said all year long, when you lose a lot of your depth, you also lose in your special teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be, we got four games left, so I'm not necessarily, you know, it's not time for offseason talk, but it's, you know, nevertheless, it is going to be a really juicy, interesting offseason. I hope they, you know, are very quick and decisive, like, you know, for better or worse, like they were with Wilkes last year, that whatever changes they're going to make, they make them quick, and then we can just get about it. And whoever needs to be signed, Brock, we go ahead and get that out the way, and it doesn't drag on into August like, you know, other contract negotiations have, so that we can get into OTAs and training camp and everything as one unified, knowing who's going to be here and where they stand with the team and all that. But we've got plenty of time to talk about that. So I guess we need player of the game.
Huh? We do need player of the game, and I'll set up the drop here. But when you were saying Harbaugh believes in his guys, he said to the press that Justin Herbert was one of the best quarterbacks of all time.
He also says he's the toughest quarterback. He also says that Harbaugh says himself he was the toughest quarterback in NFL history. So I guess you got to kind of take that for what it's
worth. All right, let's go Coach Singh, player of the game.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, you had some good ones to choose from this week.
Well, and that's why I'm kind of going to – I can't – I'm down to two, and I can't really pick. So you're going to be the deciding vote.
Okay.
Not that I'm shucking my responsibility because I really feel – the responsibility and the weight of the Coach Singh player of the week each week. So I take it with very serious, but I really cannot delineate between George and Brock. I really can't.
Well, let's do a quick recap of the players of the week. And we'll kind of talk about how many each have. So week one, where they beat the Jets in week one, it was Jordan Mason. Week two was Fred Warner. Week three was Juwan Jennings when he had 11 for 175 and three touchdowns. Week four was Fred again. Week five, B.A. Week six, Debo. Week seven, George Kittle. Week eight, George Kittle. Week nine, they had a bye. So week 10 was Brock. Week 11, J.J. again. Week 12, George Kittle. And George Kittle has, you know, if he's not the most valuable player of this team, he's really close. It's what he's one of few. I am going to say, I think if you asked George Kittle who the player of the game was, he would have said it was Brock. And I think that we should give it to Brock. This has been a season for Brock in which maybe he's not as much of the dandy of the NFL as he was last year. Steven Ruiz probably pumping his chest a little bit more about his rankings of Brock from last year and this year. But I think the ball, like we saw it. We saw what happened when Brandon Allen had to play that one week. Mm-hmm. He played as well as he possibly could, but they had no chance to win. And so when you watch Brock play and you watch him dice up and you watch him put Shanahan's game plan into reality, the team can just hum. And it almost looks like they're just at a different level. And unfortunately, they have not always been like that. So I would lean Brock because I think Brock playing as well as he did really set the tone, and George Kittle was able to turn a lot of that into some good offense. So I like both of them. Man, they would have been my two.
Let's go Brock then, because man, I saw it with my own two eyes yesterday. If you can keep Brock clean and he is decisive, it's beautiful to watch. Man, he can really, really spin it. But again, that's been both of those things have been our challenge, as keeping him clean. And then when he starts to not trust what he sees and starts holding on to the ball and starts trying to, you know, make plays, which is a great thing to have. But I think he is at his best when he's getting back there, just gripping it and ripping it and not trying to be a playmaker, just getting the ball out of his hands and letting his playmakers do the job. And that's what he was yesterday. And he was accurate and he was decisive and it was just beautiful to watch. So I'm very comfortable with Brock. This was the first week, honestly, when you went through and you just outlined the first 13 weeks or 14 weeks, I guess it technically would be with the bye. It was never a week where it was, to me, it was a doubt who the player of the week was. It was pretty anticlimactic. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I mean, it's almost like, I don't know who's going to catch George for, you know, player of the year at this point. I mean, he has been a revelation.
George's going to get some all pro votes.
Oh, I said that while we're sitting there. You know, I don't know who at tight end has played better than him this year. I mean, I guess, you know, Bowers will get some nods for coming on late, but I think consistently, and then when you add what he brings in the blocking game, and then I know that nobody else thinks about this stuff, but he is just him and Fred both, I would say, are like just the pulse of the team. Mm-hmm. And I just think, is, you know, from the outside looking in, I'm not in the building, so, you know, I got an argument today about, you know, when Shanahan said that Demo and Brock talk to the team because the team respects them and they're leaders. And, well, Fred Warner is the leader. I mean, I ain't never been in that building or in the locker room, so I can't argue who the leaders are or what and who feels about what who. But I know from, as a forward-facing player, Fred and George are very forward, front-facing leaders of the team and are spokesmen, sort of. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that people would rally to Brock.
Well, and the other way to look at it is when your team is in a bit of a funk, a lot of times you're hearing from the same guys. And those mm-hmm. same guys, someone like Fred and George, they have also been around this team for a long time, so it's actually kind of fresh to hear from some new voices. Demo, Brock's your quarterback, so you're going to listen, and he's not going to be rah-rah. Like, he's going to speak sort of quietly and let his actions show. But I actually like it, because not to say George or Fred aren't going to be with this team for a while. I hope they're with the team for as long as they keep playing. But you do need new voices. There's so much turnover in the NFL that someone like Demo, who the team just invested a lot of money in to keep him around, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, young fella, like, you know, you got the contract now. How, you know, are you able to back that up with your play? And if he does, then I think that's a nice little kick in the pants to the team. And that's not to say that Fred or George also weren't a part of that. I'm sure that they were. I'm sure Debo was. I'm sure Trent, even though, you know, he's kind of mm-hmm. been out there, like his voice is still in there. But just
on any
Steven,
good team,
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of leaders. So, yeah. And, you know, we see the same thing happening up at Chase. It looks like, you know, they're trying to hand JK a leadership role with that team to see if he, you know, if he can handle it. It seems to me. I'm curious to see what you and Bri think about that on the next death lineup.
Yeah. We both really love JK, and we feel like this moment of, like, all of a sudden, like, oh, we got to see what JK can do. It's like, how about the last 2 years when we could have done the same thing? Like, we're doing that now. But yeah. But last thing I was going to say was, not only could it have been Brock or George, and those would have been my two picks as well, Carlos Matos with 3 sacks, nothing to sneeze at.
That's pretty strong.
And Robert Ramos had Guerrero just because it was his first start. And if he doesn't get hurt, he probably does cross that 100-yard mark. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you could also throw in Leonard Floyd in there, who had 2 sacks as well. So really some pretty good options there for player of the week. So you and I will be back on Thursday night. Rams put 44 up on Buffalo yesterday.
I thought, man. That's why you don't be listening to the internet fans. You guys told me that Matt Stafford was cooked.
The dude has 3,300 yards passing this year with four games to go.
He was cooking is what he was doing. And yeah. Then, you know, that damn Josh Allen is just a cyborg. I don't even know what to say about that guy. He is incredible to watch.
They're like, how about you take Gronk and turn him into a quarterback?
it's a cheat code. It is not fair. Yeah. It's not fair, that guy. But yeah, I'll be there. Somebody had actually offer me a real good deal on tickets, but there's no way I'm going to try to get back home on Thursday night to have to deal with you know, because I got to be up Monday, Friday morning. So that as much as I would, even if, you know, if there were giveaways, I don't think I could do it, because it was hell trying to get home yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And as it turns out, after all the walking I did to get to a station where they would pick me up, by the time I got there, I could have just stayed where I was and just waited the moratorium out. So it didn't do nothing but give me my steps. But yeah, it was good. I want to thank you once again. And then Brian, if he's listening, it was a pleasure meeting him. And then Robert, of course, it was great. Finally being able to shake his hand. And after so many years of interacting in the various iterations of We Want Winners. So
yeah,
it was very nice. It's always nice to meet my Facebook friends in real life. So
yeah, man. So we'll be back after the Rams, and you know, the Niners really owe the Rams one after that week 2 game where they kind of gave Stafford took that game away from them, but they just playing with their food, and
we helped. We definitely helped. Just,
it's very disappointing, and kind of like the one of the defining games of the season. I think that Seattle game was another one. So I think the Niners own one.
What ifs? Mm-hmm. Yep.
So hopefully they'll bring it. And like you said, Stafford's balling. Kyren Williams is over 1,000. Puka had a good game, really good game. Cooper Kupp is probably not 100% healthy, but that dude's probably never going to be healthy. I think that the Niners will be able to do something offensively, because if you look at the numbers, Rams give up a decent amount of points, as you saw with the Buffalo game. And I think if the Niners, for whatever Shanahan showed on yesterday, if he can continue that and keep it going, I think the Niners are going to put some points up on the board. Now, they're also going to have to stop the Rams, whose offense was cooking yesterday. So I think it's going to be a pretty good game. And I'm less worried about kind of McVay shoving it up Shanahan's rear end than I was before they beat the Bears yesterday.
How the hell do they get Puka Nacua in the 7th round? That just doesn't even make any sense to me. That dude is a monster. He really I hate the fact that we're going to be playing against him for the next 10 years. That is just awful. Awful, awful, awful. Yeah. So I just to show you my fandom, I will be absolutely rooting against my financial interests, rooting against the Rams, because I have a 5-1 ticket for them to win the division.
So oh wow!
I hope they go ahead and lose this game and we crush their dreams.
Yeah.
So even though it'll cost me some money,
but my Thompson to Clark co-host Brad, big Rams fan, so I'm sure when he and I get back together, we'll have some discussion about Niners and Rams. And we've had some big ones over the last few years, too. So, yeah. All righty.
Arrow up for the Rams. They look really good going forward. I hope we can get our arrow going up for the future with this offseason. But, yeah, we still got 4 games to go, and we're going to finish strong. We're going to sweep the slate and go into the offseason with positive vibes. That's New Year's. I hope that's our New Year's resolution.
I like that a lot. All right. For Rod, we'll be back Thursday night. For Rod, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.
Back in 1980, 70% of clothing worn by Americans was made by Americans. Today, it's 2%. And the reason is simple. It's cheaper to make things overseas. But that doesn't change the fact that 2% of textile manufacturers have refused to give up on this country, and those companies deserve to be congratulated. I'm talking about companies like American Giant. American Giant controls every link in their supply chain, and that matters because when you buy from American Giant, you create jobs for people in factory towns all across this country. Look, I get it. Nobody wants a lecture. But if you want to see more companies make more things in this country, you got to support the companies who are already doing that very thing. This holiday, check out the clothing at American-Giant.com. Flannels, hoodies, t-shirts, and jeans made to last a lifetime. Support the 2% who are still making it here at American-Giant.com.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.